It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Sorry about the delay. I've been watching the machine that Skype comes in to do a boatload of updating for about the last hour and a half. And hey, got it up and running just in time to hit start for the evening's program. It is the 19th day of April 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com remains under repair. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. That means we're going to have a lot of ow tonight. But I don't necessarily, well, I mean, we're used to that. That's kind of the gig around here. We've got the first thing we do at the beginning of every program is to thank the partial sponsors of the program, namely our subscribers. Thank you very kindly this evening to a dear friend who wishes to remain anonymous. Thank you also to Robert in Iowa. Thank you, Robert. Thank you very kindly to Joseph in Ohio. And thank you oh so much to Dave, also in Ohio. And finally, thanks to Mike in Cascadia. Thank you, one and all. You are part of the merry little band that manages to knock down about a quarter or a week's worth of the Horn's funding each and every month. Thank you again so very, very much. If you would like to be... And I say this, and I remind you, there is a challenge on the table, courtesy of one of our longest-standing subscribers who said last night, please, take my money. I'm not George Soros, but please. I'm talking about Tony and Chico, who would like to double $100 worth of new subscriptions. Okay? If we get 10 new $10 a month subscriptions, the first month of it, Tony and Chico will double. So your first $10 a month subscription becomes $20. Okay? But that challenge remains out there, and if we had 10 new subscribers at $10 a piece this evening, that would be huge. Because remember, if we ever get enough subscribers, then all the fundraising talk slowly disappears, and we've just got 3 hours of radio every night, and that would be freaking awesome. Yes. So that's where that is. Of course, if you'd like to just help keep the program on the air, over at headon.live, there's an interface for both PayPal and the Patreon campaign. And by the way, the new subscriber challenge applies to new subscribers either at Patreon or PayPal. All you do is click the little box on the PayPal button that says make this happen the same time every month. And then the Patreon campaign is just... Well, it comes out the first day of the month every month. Like if you signed up for Patreon right now, you would not even be charged until May the 1st. And we've got almost enough Patreon subscribers to knock down one day of funding. So that's where all that stands. As it is, as far as general fundraising is concerned, we came up short. We've come up short pretty much Tuesday and Wednesday. So we've got $460 to raise this evening. We try to raise $200 every night, and we pulled in at minus 260 last night. We're at 200 this evening. So that's $460 to raise this evening in order to keep on track for fundraising free radio. Okay, so that's where everything stands as far as that's concerned. You know, 10 at $46, 46 people at $10. And the usual reminder that if you choose to be a subscriber at $10 a month, well, you're going to be out every bit of something a little less than half a McDonald's hamburger per day. I know. I don't even think it would even be a whole White Castle or a whole Crystal. Yes. So maybe consider that and help us keep things going. We're at, you know, again, 460 to raise. And it would be great if we could even raise 200 of that so that tomorrow's not one of those great big terrifying miraculous talk about it all night Friday on the front porches. But it may be, because this is Thorn in the Side Thursday. If you would like to participate in the chat room, we're having a lot of fun with that. The old one is pretty much gone the way of all flesh as far as I can tell. But the new one works great because it means that people on Macs and people who can't cope with Java can participate too. And so if you pick yourself out a screen name and a password by going to headon.live, well, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Foam Cups and Hoghead and Jack Crab and Squeaky and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who is still a spacing guild master, but folding space has become just a little bit more a little bit more complicated than it once was. So that's where that is. Come on by. You'll have a lot of fun, and there's no tardy bell or anything like that. Just wander in when the mood strikes you. And we'll see where Thorn in the Side Thursday . All right, where to begin? There are so many possibilities. We have just not any particular earth-shattering, but we've got a new NASA administrator. Mm-hmm. It's nothing to get particularly excited about and could be something to get, well, kind of worried about. Jim Bridenstine. You'll notice it's not Einstein. Jim Bridenstine of Oklahoma-stan, home of graft-encrusted EPA administrator Scott Pruitt. Jim Bridenstine, maggot, Trumpanzee, formerly a teabagger. Jim Bridenstine was confirmed along party lines in a vote in the Senate. Mm-hmm. He was confirmed today. The tally was 50 in favor, 47 against. Yeah. 50 Republicans, 47 Democrats, which is an interesting number, I might add. Why? Because it was a party line vote. 50 Republicans voted for him. 47 Democrats and two independents voted against him. So it was actually 50 to 49. He just squeaked in. But for those of us who pay attention to the proclivities of the mugwumps of the Democratic Party, of the people who cannot be counted on to get a vote right, that's a meaningful number. That means that mirabile dictu, Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp actually voted against this freak. And freak he is. Among other things, NASA, you may recall, and NASA holds a special place in my heart. It's one of the better bargains within the American bureaucracy. The NASA budget is as near nothing as something as grand as a portion of the federal budget can be. We don't pour a bunch of money into NASA. And they generally get a lot of mileage, considering NASA leaves the planet from time to time. They get a lot of mileage out of the budget we give them. And they do serious, solid science. Only they may not be doing that anymore, now that we have Jim Bridenstine. Because, among other things, Jim Bridenstine, well, he's one of those people, because he is a loyal Trumpansy, he's a maggot. He agrees with his boss that climate change is a cruel Chinese hoax designed to destroy our ability to manufacture crap, and that there's nothing, you know, really going on with the climate that hasn't been going on with the climate since the ball of gas and dust from the Big Bang began to coalesce together. And Jim Bridenstine probably doesn't believe in that either. It's every bit as likely that he's one of those talking snake people. I don't mean he's a talking snake. I mean, he believes in, well, you know, vituperative vipers. Mm-hmm. Marty pointing out, I guess that means the James Webb Space Telescope may never launch now, or TESS, or dot, dot, dot. I don't know if it's that dire, but here's the thing. Anything that NASA does that has to do with climate change or studying the climate, that's probably going to be zeroed out. Because the best way to prove that climate change isn't real, well, the first rule of climate change is never talk about climate change. And among other things, the for-profit media are very good at that. There's a report over at Think Progress that you might find interesting if you want to chase it down. It's by one of the country's better climate writers, Joe Rahm. It's titled, The Most Important Thing You Can Do to Fight Global Warming. It is subheaded, End the Climate Spiral of Silence. And Joe Rahm really is one of our best climate writers out there today. And he talks about the fact that the for-profit media isn't worth a tinker's damn when it comes to fulfilling its fourth estate obligation to inform the public on something as existentially critical as climate change. His article is backed up by data. Yale and George Mason University researchers did a survey. A statistically relevant number of adults, 1,278. And of those 1,278 adults surveyed, only about 20% said that they hear people they know making mention of climate change, and this is the language from the survey, quote, at least once a month, unquote. On the contrary, 65% of the Americans surveyed, get this, because this is an example of that bubble I talk about us living in. There's a dangerous proclivity for us to think that because we're plugged in, because we're paying attention, that everybody else is too, and that maybe we don't need to talk about things outside our little community here. But within the framework of the survey, almost 66%, in fact, 65% of the respondents said the words rarely or never best describe how often they talk about global warming and climate change with friends or family. I don't have the actual survey here. I've got Joe Rahm's article. But I can posit a hypothesis for this. You know why so few of us talk about climate change? Because this country is divided so granularly that discussing climate change only means that you're going to wind up in an argument with one of your cranky old family members who spends all of his or her time parked in front of the television, having poison poured into their brains by the likes of Fox News, TV, Radio Rwanda, and now Sinclair Broadcasting and One America News, or that website that rhymes with light and fart, any number of possibilities and alternatives. And so we don't talk about climate change within our family because it's almost bound to result in somebody piping up, "Well, you know, there's really no such thing. That young Hannity fella done told me. He said it's got something to do with sunspots and Chinese communists. And you know how it is with those Chinese communists. I don't know anything about sunspots, but by crackies, I don't trust no Chinese. Especially if they're messing with our climate, which they're not. It's all a hoax. I seen that on Fox, too. And apparently, our great president even told us on one of those Tweety thingies. I don't know what the tweeting is, but he does a lot of it, and he talks to the American people in plain bad English, like we all can understand, and there's no such thing. And so at that point in time, the rational, sane family members who aren't prone to picking their teeth with their own toenail clippings, they go, you know, how about them Red Sox? Let's go Mountaineers. Go Herd. Anything to keep cranky old Uncle Emery from going on and on about what he heard on Fox. Do I have empirical data for this? No. But I deeply suspect it. On the other hand, asked in the survey why they don't talk about it, the respondents said, because it never comes up. But again, I think it never comes up because there's no way to talk about it without having somebody within the group lose their mind, or what's left of their mind. Steve in New York, pointing out subject line, NASA guy, what a step downward from James Hansen. and adds, talking about climate change, it's really a bigger issue than climate change. Name almost any issue. When people cannot even acknowledge facts, we can't discuss what those facts mean. It is broader. Yeah, I agree, Steve. But particularly where climate change is concerned, well, American families don't talk about it. And the American for-profit media doesn't talk about it. Only 43% of the people in the survey said that they hear about global warming from the for-profit media once a month or more frequently. This is all very real. Joe Rahm prescribes that people concerned about the climate take a cue from the playbook of the LGBT community and break the silence and refuse to be silent, regardless of the pushback. What was that old saying? We're here, we're queer, we're not going away. And we haven't come up with anything catchy like that in regard to the climate, or sea level rise, or heat waves, or more intense cold snaps, or springs that just don't arrive. I actually had to put a bottle of propane on in the studio today because it's freaking freezing in here. Well past the midway point of April. And it's not just here, it's elsewhere too, other people talking about it. It's like spring has a bad clutch and can't quite get in gear. The trees have been slow to leaf out here. The wild cherry tree in my yard has finally put out a few leaf buds. But weather, of course, we know, weather is not climate. But over time, trends will develop. We spent most of the day here today in the 30s. Tomorrow, we might see 55. Saturday, we might see 63. The projection over the next 9 to 10 days does not include the place where I live reaching 70 degrees Fahrenheit. And that really does take a lot of the zip and a lot of the kick out of spring. So anyway, back to Jim Bridenstine. It actually presents, the vote presents a little bit of hope for opposition to Mike Pompeo. If we can keep the likes of Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp and, yeah, even Tim Kaine, former firebrand vice presidential candidate, in line. It could very easily, the floor vote could very easily go the other way if Rand Paul stands by what he said and refuses to vote for Pompeo, and Joe Manchin stays in line, and Heidi Heitkamp is reminded that she's a Democrat and not a goddamn Republican. And Claire McCaskill doesn't wet herself out of petrifying fear. It's still a climb. It's still an uphill battle. But today's vote indicates that maybe the grade isn't quite as steep as what we might have previously thought. Bridenstine, in the meantime, is the first politician to occupy the office. He is not a scientist by any stretch of the imagination. He did get to fly jets for the United States Navy for a little while, but that's really not a qualification to run a relatively large federal agency. Plus, back from 2008 to 2010, before he ran for Congress, he may have been running a little bit of a scam, Bridenstine. Back then, he was the executive director of the Tulsa Air and Space Museum and Planetarium, and who knew Tulsa had one of those? But in 2010, he pulled together an air show that involved rocket-powered airplanes. And the business that provided said rocket-powered airplanes was one in which he himself was an investor. So he set up a thing whereby the company that was paid to do the thing made money, which in turn made money for Jim Bridenstine, and that's called self-dealing. You know how we know it's a problem? Because Cheryl Kaufman, the communications director for Jim Bridenstine, said, "This is an old story. No there, there. The accusations have been fully refuted by members of the board of directors of the museum both in 2012 and again in September 2017. But as far as the climate is climate change is concerned, it was 2013 when Jim Bridenstine went after the Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House and said that the Obama administration was just throwing money down a rat hole trying to study something that don't even exist. Climate change. That's not a quote. That's me describing what he did. And, of course, if you work for NASA and you're gay and married, he may be a problem for them, too. "I stand squarely in support of traditional marriage." Whew. And he only got a vote out of Mitch McConnell when Mitch McConnell was absolutely lead pipe cinch certain that he was going to win, you know, by that one vote. There we go. So that's just a starting place. Nothing earth-shattering. A little bit of bad, a little bit of good. Cause for maybe a little bit of hope. Lee in New York says, NASA, cheapest per mile. NASA sent a probe to Pluto. New York City extended the 7 train from Times Square to Javits Convention Center. Guess which cost less? Of course, it was the NASA project. Yeah, they really do get a lot of bang for their buck. Climate change chance, says Steve in New York. It's here. It's clear. Climate change is real. By Jove. That would even fit on a bumper sticker. The "it's here and it's clear" on the top line. Climate change is real on the bottom. I like that. But I mentioned Mugwump Joe Manchin. Joe has a new idea. Actually, Joe has an old idea. Ideas are not Joe's strong suit. But somewhere along the way, somebody whispered some sweet carboniferous nothings in his ear. And consequently, he is now asking the Trump administration to use, get this, the Defense Production Act of 1950. I saw this in a tweet. To prop up worn out, being replaced coal-fired power plants and prevent them from being closed, even if the private entities that run them and own them want to close them. Now, the Defense Production Act of 1950 was a response to some labor upheavals and market manipulation and gouging that took place during time of war. And Congress gave Harry Truman the power, for instance, to set prices for steel during the Korean War. It is specifically geared toward times of war, national crisis, national disaster. Remember back when those playful guys from Enron were taping phone calls with each other and sending emails and whatnot, laughing about how they were going to screw Granny in California by jacking up her gas prices? Well, the Defense Production Act of 1950 was triggered back then, too, to try to stop Enron from just burglarizing California by the cubic meter. And so a letter went out under the letterhead of Joe Manchin, statesman, to the Trump administration, went out yesterday. Interesting timing, isn't it? He urged Trump to, quote, consider using the tools embodied in the Defense Production Act of 1950 to keep coal-fired power plants from being shut down. Now, we're not in a time of war, so to speak, when coal-fired electricity production is a part of critical national infrastructure. The reason coal-fired power plants are being shut down, of course you know this, is because they are not nearly as efficient and not nearly as and far more expensive to operate than gas-fired power plants, which of course are in their own right a climate nightmare. But Donald Trump needs Joe Manchin's vote for Mike Pompeo. And it would appear by the production of this letter that Manchin has established his price. You know the punchline to the old joke, we all know what you are, now we're just negotiating the price. Ta-da! In his letter, Joe said, the security of our homeland is inextricably tied to the security of our energy supply. You need to ensure that the nation's domestic industrial base is capable of providing the essential materials needed to defend our nation and protect our sovereignty. Yeah, because ISIS is going to come and get our coal. Jesus Christ, this man is stupid. And, well, I surmise that out there are sex workers with far better morals and far more ethics than Joe Manchin ever manifests when it comes to the realities of his, well, you know, the coal association sticks their hand up his, and then the next thing you know, they're moving his mouth. So, at least we know the nature of the transaction. We know what the fee is. God Almighty. Jack in Shreveport with a note. Jim Bridenstine being a pilot and running NASA is like a meat mechanic running housing. Well, there's that. Or a guy who sold meat through the mail being president. Oh, shit, that actually happened. Scott and Punky with a note. Speaking of Senator Joe Manchin, he's among the talking heads in a documentary I watched the other night. It's called What Lies Upstream and is being currently featured on the PBS program Independent Lens on stations around the country. It's mainly about the horrors of industrial chemical leaks into a major West Virginia municipal water system. But it also touches upon these kinds of issues elsewhere. Yes, What Lies Upstream is about, for the most part, the Freedom disaster, which was discussed on this program. I remember the night that the story broke. And the weeks after, when we talked about the real after effects, which were largely neglected and were never sufficiently addressed. And 300,000 people in this state are currently participating in an involuntary long-term study to find out the effects of various dosages of MCHM. It's either methylcyclohexane methanol or methylchlorohexane methanol on the human body. And that's everybody from infants who are now toddlers to elderly people who may not even be with us anymore. Yep, Silent R. Lamar, subject line, bad clutch. With Trump as your leader, what do you expect? Anything he touches turns out bumpy. Whiplash, anybody? Yeah. Bill in Allentown says, subject line, NASA. NASA had a very good budget to deal with before old St. Reagan. If it weren't for his tax cuts, Challenger's disaster might not have happened until after the Bush tax cuts. We may not be as deeply in the climate denial hole that we are today. Sparky says, yeah, here's a climate change story for you. A string of 11 particularly cold days, four of which saw lows between 26 and 28 degrees, when that neck of the woods in California is not prone to seeing such temperatures. And the story that Sparky sends along has to do with what is being considered to be a possible almond disaster, with 40% of the almond crop having been lost in I'm gonna mispronounce this. It's either Tehama or Tehama County, or it could be pronounced Smith in Northern California. The dateline is Red Bluff. Where have I heard of that before? A declaration of disaster has been requested this week by that county's Department of Agriculture because 40% of the almond crop was just destroyed. The official loss, measured in dollars, $19,536,084. Damn. And as we move into the, well, maybe somewhere, warmer part of the year, the southeastern drought will come back into play. Because that hasn't gone away. Yes, further comparisons, courtesy of Steve in New York, or a brain surgeon running HUD. Oh, damn, that's real, too. I confess, I'm woefully, woefully tired of just Trump gossip, because there's so much skeevy, sleazy, disturbing crap that's out there otherwise. Like something most of us probably, well, maybe you heard it on another program than the last few days. But we've been so eaten up with people like Michael Cohen and so forth that it's very possible that this one little nugget of information, it managed to slip past us. And it is significant. The story came from The Hill, and I didn't catch any discussion of it on any of the news channels that I follow. Of course, it's the same problem. One-hour segments of Trump gossip. But while we weren't looking, the Trump regime decided to go after the most vulnerable among us again. The story was published 5 days ago. And an executive order, as The Hill describes it, was quietly issued earlier this week. And it flew under the radar. Well, at least the Hill managed to do a story about it. And this executive order is, to say the least, broad in scope and profound in effect. He took out his order sign and executive order sign in crayon, put his name to it, held it up to show to remind everybody that he really can write his name. And it's a directive to the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Department of Agriculture, and some other agencies not necessarily named, agencies to be named later, and it's aimed at taking away benefits from people who participate in what shambles remains of the social safety net. Because Trump is of the opinion, and look, he doesn't form opinions by himself unless it's an opinion about the size of a woman's breasts or the desirability of the curvature of her buttocks or the blondness of her dye job. But somebody told him that the poors out there are laying around in their welfare hammocks and soaking up all that federal government money that could be so much better put to use being given to billionaires. And so the way it works is that it says that any program that provides means-tested assistance, that means you can't get it unless you have a certain threshold of financial need, or people who are on assistance programs for those with low incomes. And it says that everybody has to either work or fuck off. from the terms of the executive order? Since its inception, the welfare system has grown into a large bureaucracy that might be susceptible to measuring success by how many people are enrolled in a program rather than by how many people have moved away from poverty into financial independence. Good God. Over at the Center for American Progress, Rebecca Vallis, who's the managing director of the Poverty to Prosperity program, like that happens, Rebecca Vallis said, Trump's trying to erect a smokescreen in the shape of Reagan's welfare queen so people don't see he's coming after the entire middle and working class. On the other hand, Representative Tom Cole, Republican of, oh, there they are again, Oklahoma, said, for able-bodied single adults, I certainly favor work requirements. Meanwhile, the zombie-eyed Granny Starver, the outgoing Speaker of the House of Representatives, Paul Ryan, who has scarcely ever worked an honest day in his life, said, we want to smooth the path from welfare to work, pull people out of poverty, pull people out of welfare. Actually, you're pulling the welfare away from the people, and fuck them if they starve, right, Paul? I wish Pope Frank would just quit fucking around and excommunicate his sorry ass just to, because, you know, he's all about the depth and devotion of his faith. And every time he breathes out and breathes in again, he is in direct, he's in direct conflict with the so-called church teachings of the church. Do that candle-breaking shit and I declare anathema upon thee and tell him he can't be buried in hallowed ground and see if that'll help wake him up to the fact that he needs to quit fucking poor people. So, it's just another, on Capitol Hill, for the most part, poor, hungry people don't have a lobby. And to the extent that they even have one, it ain't much of one. So it'll get even funner and funner as this executive order begins to take effect. What's that? You want enough money for three bricks of the low-rent ramen a day there? Ha! Where are you working? Oh, you're not working. You're going to have to work if you want that, and once you start working, we're going to tell you you're too rich for us to give you enough money for three bricks of ramen every day. And Rebecca Vallis is, of course, correct, because there's just dog whistles all over this. Because nobody ever remembers. Go tell the Trumpansies that the vast majority of welfare benefits are hoovered up by white folks. What? Really? That's one of them liberal lies, isn't it? That's fake news. We all know the only people getting welfare in this country are the wrong coloreds. And we just wanted us to quit being so shiftless and get out there and work an honest day. It's a brutal-ass country. It really is. Meanwhile, Silent R. Lamar says, okay, Bob, stop telling us how to milk America. Small jingle. Okay, that's a good three. Yeah, poor people and disabled people. Anatole adds, and yes, I agree. You are correct. But it, we are, we're pretty harsh. And we're pretty racist. You know, a couple of nights ago, we played Spot the Nazi. It's not much of a game anymore because it's getting pretty easy. But with this story, at least Alabama and Mississippi are getting some relief. Let's go back to Michigan again. Let's go to Bay City Western High School, where they had to shut, you know, not because of a teacher strike, teachers standing up for their students and the state education budget and all that sort of stuff like's happened in Kentucky and West Virginia and Oklahoma, maybe Arizona. No, they shut down the entire school today at Bay City Western because for the past week, people have been surrounding the high school with pickup trucks. Did I mention this was Michigan? Flying Confederate flags, the devil's diaper. I wish I was kidding. But I'm not. The unrest required Stephen Bigelow, the superintendent of the school system there, to shut down classes because about 6 a.m. today, he got word that people were coming to the high school to get up in the faces of the students. Dozens of pickup trucks with Confederate flags were basically intimidating the school as of yesterday. They also flew Trump flags. They flew Punisher skull flags. And, of course, they flew the urine-colored snake flag. What it boils down to is there is a very, very small minority of African-American students at Bay City Western. And they have said that for a very long time now, they have been targets for harassment even before the Confederate flag putsch. Kendrick Tsilyagi organized a counter-protest saying, "We understand they can't stop them," meaning the school officials, because, you know, that Confederate flag, that's free speech. But something needs to be done. We have such a small minority population of students, and we're in a conservative area. Well, how about that? A conservative area kind of explains things, doesn't it? We're a white majority school. It's making some of the students and people feel uncomfortable and unwelcome. Janelle Zissler, interviewed by WNEM-TV, said, "Kids hurt themselves over this. Kids kill themselves over this." Addressing the school system, "If we send you a video of a student calling somebody an effing N-word, something should be done about that." And apparently racist bullying has gone on at the school for quite a while. The little handful of black students there say that being referred to with racial slurs is nothing new, and that they are occasionally referred to as slave. Superintendent Bigelow tried to squirm around and put as good a face on it as he could. He said that, the community gets frustrated because when we talk about what type of discipline or what student got what discipline, that's information we're never able to share. And then, of course, the news story interviews one of the Confederates there in Michigan. Cameron Myers said, it's not, and it's a Confederate flag story. How am I supposed to not do the cracker ass accent? It's not about racism. It's a country boy thing. If we were going over there and saying racist slurs and cussing them out, that would be another thing. Mary Williams graduated from the same school, and she just wishes that those mouthy malcontents would go away. I think there's other stuff in life to worry about. Kids are going to be kids. We just want sunshine. Sunshine. Of course, there's video and audio out there of three students driving about. And you can hear one of the teen mutter, fucking niggers. Fly 'em high, boys. Again, sorry about the word, but this is reporting. And, you know, the superintendent just says, you know, we can't tell people what we've done with these rotten human beings. And gosh, some of them aren't even students, so we can't do anything with them. I'll be damned. I had no idea that Michigan didn't have any laws against trespassing or stalking or terrorizing or threatening. It must be a real Wild West up at Bay City Western. Jesus. Oh, and thanks very kindly. Thanks to Leo. Leo just jumped in to get us started. We're down to $450 to go this evening. Leo says, I love your Wednesday night church night. Thank you. Reconnected with your show after you filled in for Mike Malloy a week or so ago. Well, thank you, Leo. Thank you for getting us started. Thank you so very much indeed. And by the way, in terms of a program note, a week from tonight, I'll be filling in for Malloy again. So mark your calendars. Note from Rhonda in Virginia. A man said climate change wasn't real, going back to the earlier story. Best way I dealt with running into someone who brought up climate change can't exist because it's been unreasonably cold in Virginia this year today was this. I replied, it's stupid to say climate change doesn't exist. I said to him that anyone who buys the rhetoric of Trump on the issue is just stupid. I began to inform him how toxifying our environment is nothing new. It's been going on for decades. Best way to get around it was bringing up the Love Canal. I brought up the debacle of keep on dumping at the James and Appomattox River decades ago, how farmers in Louisiana found trees and foliage burned, turned brown, and cattle and animals were sickened and died from dumping of toxins. The fact that unleaded gas finally was introduced in 1996. Effective January 1, 1996, the Clean Air Act banned the sale of the small amount of leaded fuel that was still available in some parts of the country for use in on-road vehicles. My father had a gas station for years, Rhonda notes. I explained to him Greenland is melting. I've been to Greenland years ago. I told him even as a child in the early 60s, we all knew about the dangers of toxins in the environment. I simply said that we have always known that toxins have caused miscarriages, cancer, and other detrimental things. I told him there's a direct correlation between toxins causing harm to the environment for decades, period. He had not a word to say in retort. Stupidity is no excuse. If info about the toxins has had an effect on our environment for decades, in the air or earth, everyone has to know about toxicity. I am so damn sick of stupid. And the president perpetuates it. Thanks, Rhonda in Virginia. Well, Rhonda, thank you for speaking up. That's the way forward. You know, the fact of the matter is, you talk about the dumping of toxins. One of the most fascinating and horrifying recent stories is that of a little community that's not 15 miles away from me here. It was a coal camp once upon a time, as were most of the communities around here. The name of the little town, you can look it up and you'll find a string of stories. Minden, M-I-N-D-E-N, West Virginia. It is a poisoned place on a par with the degree of toxicity of Love Canal. And naturally, the most poisonous part of this poison place, curiously, is the place where people of color live. They live nearest to the most toxic part of the area. A company that produced crap for the coal industry for years and years, if not decades, dumped PCBs into the soil, and it got into the groundwater, and everybody and their cousin in Minden has cancer or has died of cancer. And the EPA drags its heels. And the state of West Virginia says, well, there ain't no cancer cluster there, eh? Yeah, I reckon that's just God's will. Now here's, I don't know how to address this, because these are just facts. I've noted repeatedly that I live in a high tourism area. Tourism in my area accounts for the existence of my area as anything other than a series of ghost towns. And starting about this time of year and running up through the third Saturday in October, people will come from all over because it is a magnificent place. I'm actually toying. I don't know if I've got the upper body strength to do it, but I'm thinking about trying. I'm toying with the idea of maybe learning to do a little rock climbing myself. Back in my younger years, I did quite a lot of it, stupidly. You know, no harnesses, no ropes, just free climbing and hoping for the best. It was dumb. But I'm still here. But I'm thinking about maybe getting in touch with one of the companies that teaches real, honest-to-goodness, safety-first rock climbing, because the area where I live is a magnet for people who love to climb, because there's something like 1,600 different cliff climbing accesses here, all along the sandstone cliffs of the New River Gorge, and even in the dead of winter when it gets really brutally cold, if there's been some precipitation. We have waterfalls that freeze freaking solid, and the ice climbers come here then, and you can watch those crazy little bastards going up a frozen waterfall with ice axes and crampons, and you're like, you're nuts! But here's the rub. I've told you also that starting last week, we've been doing a little hiking around here, because it's a magnificent place for hiking. And there's all kinds of different trailheads and different degrees of difficulty. The one that we did last week was listed as moderate, and I'd say that was fair, but a good bit of slope, a good bit of, you know, some scrambling. But there are others that are just easy, you know, flat as a pancake. Pleasant to just walk along. It's not even really... the difference between a walk and a hike is the degree to which you find yourself at the end of it going, son of a gun, that hurts. But one of the easier hikes around here goes, well, there goes somebody that needs a new exhaust. Did you hear that? Sorry, someday we'll soundproof this place. One of the easier hikes follows an old narrow gauge Chesapeake and Ohio rail trail, rail bed that's been turned into a trail. And until one of the bridges went out that used to be a trestle on the CNO, you could walk all the way from the trailhead all the way down to the New River. Beautiful walk. Here's the problem. One of the trestles is out now, and there's no way around it. So you can walk like 1.96 miles and then turn around and walk another 1.96 miles back. But the trailhead is at Minden. In years gone by, if there had been such a trail, would you have gone hiking at Love Canal? Would you have gone to Love Canal to celebrate the magnificent natural beauty of the region? If you did so and nobody told you that you were hiking on a toxic waste site, would you be pissed? Would you be worried if you found out subsequently that you'd spent a day hiking around in a poisonous place? It's not like there's any signs. Warning, hike at your own risk. No. And all these little streams, most of them are still impacted one way or another by mine drainage. And I don't necessarily know what the answer there is. But it sure seems like there ought to be some public disclosure. Because just about everything having to do with this tourist area has to do with an old railroad grade. Or an old road that runs to an old coal camp. Or runs past ruins of old coal towns like Brooklyn. Brooklyn, West Virginia. And there's nothing there to warn people that everything associated with the coal industry is poisonous. And that, like unexploded ordnance from the First World War laying in the ground in some field in France, old coal towns can still be very dangerous. Now, that's not me saying don't come to West Virginia. That's not me saying don't enjoy the magnificence of this place, because it is magnificent. But there are questions that very much need to be answered. The email's been rolling in. Jack in Shreveport, subject line, welfare in Louisiana. It says L.A. for a minute there. Wait, Shreveport, yeah. Earlier this week on local TV news, another old white Louisiana lawmaker was babbling on about drug testing welfare recipients. Oh, we've already got that here in almost level West by Cold Trump Genius Stan. Because, you know, when those poor that are druggies, when they rub the marijuanas into their scalp so it gets in and put it in their eyeballs so it gets into their brains faster, it gives them the hungries. And then they eat more food. And then they complain that they're not getting enough food stamp benefits because they've got the, what do they call, yeah, they call them the hungries from where they're sticking the marijuanas up their butts. Yeah, we've got that. Yeah, right. Steve in New York, in regard to welfare, says, people on welfare, can we require congressmen and women to work because most of them don't work and they receive $175,000 in welfare payments? Well, hell's bells, Steve. I'd just like to start by drug testing the little bastards. Silent R. Lamar. The Lord speaks to Paul Ryan. The Lord said, heal the sick. Paul Ryan said, nope. The Lord said, clothe the naked. Paul Ryan said, nope. The Lord said, feed the hungry. Paul Ryan said, nope, Lord. All you ask of me is not in my book, so stop talking. I'm not listening. Different Bible, you understand. Meanwhile, Alexander says, the weather, going back to the climate stories, the weather is definitely off kilter, Brother Kincaid. It was raining earlier this morning here in Rancho Palos Verdes, a city in Los Angeles County. It's been extremely and unusually cold during this time of the year. It seems to be the story all over the place. That means somewhere it's got to be just burning the hell up. Hi, Robert. How's life in Oz? Let's see here. As to my use of that reprehensible word, Marty says, you're quoting, not speaking. Put the thought out of your mind. Well, thank you. I hate it. I hate it. And it gives me the shiver and quivers every time I have to deal with that godforsaken word. So. For a thorn in the side Thursday, I think we're off to a. Oh, great. The cats are bulldogging the studio door again. They want to be back here and reprogram the mix desk so bad. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you noticed this. Some of you did. I folded space last night. Yes, I can do it too. I don't talk a lot about it, but I can. At the very same time that I was filibobstering here, I was also talking to Brad Friedman over on the Bradcast. I know a lot of you caught it, and I got some nice feedback on it, and thank you for that. But it's kind of cool being in two places at once. Now, it's about 13 past the hour. We do call what we do here conversation radio. And if you would like to engage in some of the same, I heartily encourage and welcome you to, especially if you've never called the program before. If you've just sat there quietly all these years, occasionally yelling at the speakers. I can't tell you how much fun it is to have somebody talk back. So maybe give it a try. First time callers get cowbells. The number, of course, is 304-574-8178. Toll free, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And from anywhere on the planet that you can get past some governmental firewall or whatever, that means calls from Saudi Arabia and Iran are probably out. But Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And they all come into the same computer. They're all the same line, but it's just different ways of reaching the program. And so we'll take the break. And see where else this thorn in the side Thursday is going to take us. Oh, just kind of browsing around for a... browsing around for a good bumper tune. Yeah, why not? That makes... yeah. Why not? So, speaking of Brad, the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on the way. Want to chat? You're welcome to. Otherwise, I'll keep filibobstering. Up to y'all. And thank you again to Leo. We got $450 to raise this evening, and we've raised 10 of it so far. Thank you. It would be great not to be talking about $650 tomorrow. So if we could, whatever, if we can just knock that down, it would be awesome. By the way, Robert in Australia responds, how's life in Oz? Halfway through autumn and we're still having 30 degrees centigrade plus days. And even I know that's hot. Flavio, on the other hand, who is not all that terribly far from Michigan. I mean, I think there's some swimming involved, but, well, not if you go across the north. Flavio says, what the f*** are they teaching in Michigan schools? That Michigan fought for the Confederacy? Look, toddle around Wisconsin a little while. You'll see that flag there, too, and in Minnesota and in Iowa. The treasonous bastards who started that dust-up in 1860 would be so proud. Larry, meanwhile, with a rather expansive note, says, the southern and midwestern white folks, 99.99% of them are scum. I heard some dipshit song that had a line called Song, Song, Song of the South, Sweet Potato Pie, and Shut Your Mouth. That would be the band Alabama, Larry. That says all you need to know about how 99.99% of southern and about 50 to 75% of midwestern white folks are ignorant. Minds that I'm really sorry, Bob, but should be starved out and... whoa, that's cold. Lay them to rest in ashes of coal, or better yet, just throw them alive into the coal mines. Keep it up, you fucking saltine crackers. Oh, my God, Larry's on a roll. Next lib or progressive that gets in the White House, I'd say that I was, but I would not. Will do anything at all that would benefit anyone white in the South and lower Midwest. Fuck y'all all time to start taking... It's time to start taking... Need some punctuation here, Larry. I do this stuff on the fly, buddy. Time to start taking some action and holding your dipshit families accountable. Much karma, much karma coming to you bastards. All you need to know about how scummy white folk are from that part of the country is that you could still get regular leaded gasoline in the late 90s. Shit, we were done with that on the West Coast by the mid-80s. Neil Young wrote a great song once upon a time that describes 99.99% of Southern white men, even to this day, to a T. Well, I think the number's a little lower than 99.99% because I know enough people here in this state that could take that down at least 2 or 3%. Maybe 10. And you know that's the weird part is that people lead these bifurcated or even trifurcated lives. Lives that are driven as much by cognitive dissonance as anything else. You know, if they get sick, for the most part, the evangelical fundies, they get their happy ass to the doctor. Now, they like it better when the doctor says, God bless, before he writes the prescription for some life-saving medication. But they want their science. That's the problem. And it's a conversational problem. It's a dialogue problem. They want their science, but they want it on their terms. And not to get all prayer meeting Wednesday, because, man, we had a belly full of it last night. But that is one of the essential problems, and it's not just white folks in the South and the Midwest. It's the American people writ large. And I'm sure you've heard the term, and most of the time the people who use the term are theocratic religious maniacs who talk about cafeteria Christians. The concept of the cafeteria being you get your tray and your knife and your fork and your spoon and your napkin, and you start sliding down the rail there, and yeah, I want the carrot salad. No, I don't want the Jell-O salad. I'll take the fried fish, no thanks, on the Brussels sprouts. Yeah, I want... And so you pick and choose based upon your own desires from what's on offer. Now, according to the hypocritical religious animals, they think that Christians who don't adhere to their particular dogma, and you know what, this is transferable. It's transferable to Judaism, it's transferable to Hinduism, it's transferable to Islam, because none of these religions are monolithic. They like to present the illusion of it, but they are not. And so their version of theocracy is the valid version, and anybody who doesn't hew closely to that version becomes a cafeteria Christian. But we're not just cafeteria religious people. It is probably far more deleterious to the culture that we are cafeteria we like our reality cafeteria style. We want medical science. And we want the very best of it. You know, when Jerry Falwell's fat ass was on the way out off the planet, and his heart started just stopping every now and then, because even his heart was, you know, Jerry Falwell's heart was rejecting Jerry Falwell. Well, Jerry Falwell didn't call up Billy Graham or Oral Roberts or Kenneth Copeland to come and lay hands on him and heal him. He went to the goddamn hospital, and after railing hammer and tongs against the Muslims, he was mighty happy to have a brilliant Muslim cardiologist and heart surgeon to save his ass. I mean, I remember the news story. The doctor in question's name was Muhammad. But he didn't want anything to do with climate change. And, you know, there are people out there who will acknowledge climate change, but they're pretty sure that there are micro nanobe chips in the vaccines that are going to make children more susceptible to chemtrails or something. I know people with good environmental credentials who cannot understand me when I say that there's no such thing as clean coal, because they'll acknowledge that, well, yeah, but I mean, the carbon capture could work. I mean, it's a question of the... No, God damn it. If it is, if the very beginning of the extraction process involves killing people, It's going to be dirty with blood every step of the way onward. It can never be clean. Well, I mean, am I saying that we need to swallow everything whole? No, not really. But we need to be aware of the biases that we all bring to any inquiry. And be awake and alert to it. And question ourselves when we're confronted by it. And I'm not saying I'm any better at it than anybody else. I mean, I know what medical science says about nitrites and nitrates. But I want my bacon. Okay? I know, but I just told you the story of what's going on in Minden. But I'll hike that trail. And I'll do it in the name of good health. So, it's an awareness thing. An awareness thing. So maybe we'll get into, go wandering off into the swamp here in a little bit and deal with our obligatory portion of Trump gossip. Even understanding at the same time we're doing it that we're probably missing out on something far more significant along the way. So let's take that break. And again, hopefully, we will knock down some of that $450 fundraising hole, if at all humanly possible. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Be part of the conversation if you wish. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thursday, April 19, 2018.
1.5 million clients from the Puerto Rico Power Authority in the dark.
Puerto Rico's fragile electric grid hit by another island-wide blackout.
We have to expect, unfortunately, a further slowdown of this important ocean circulation system.
New studies warn the Gulf Stream current is slowing down. Earth Day 2018 is focused on ending plastic pollution, plus...
The companies that knowingly caused this crisis should help pay their fair share.
Oil industry slapped with two new climate liability lawsuits.
All of those slaps and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Trump canceled his trip to monitor events in Syria. Sarah Huckersanders explained that Trump's national security team thought it was best to stay in the United States, adding Mar-a-Lago happens to be with in the United States. But thanks to global warming, it'll soon be in international waters.
This is your Green News Report.
Global warming fans, all right. If you can't fight it, get used to it. Now,
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, just more bad news for Puerto Rico.
Yes, indeed. 7 months after Hurricane Maria, the entire island of Puerto Rico lost power again on Wednesday. According to the San Juan El Nuevo Dia newspaper, the outage was caused by a private Oklahoma contractor, Cobra Energy, accidentally hitting a major transmission line, creating a domino effect that tripped two power plants offline.
So we are 7 months now since Hurricane Maria.
Yep.
And even before all the power went down on Wednesday, some 44,000 were still without power after all of those months.
Yes, and that same contractor is linked to a different power outage that occurred just last week. It is another reminder that while nearly all of the island's generation capacity is back online, its grid remains fragile and unstable. It's the worst blackout in American history, and this week it officially became the second longest blackout in world history. And the 2018 hurricane season starts in 6 weeks.
But don't forget, Donald Trump gave himself an A-plus for his response to that hurricane.
As far as Puerto Rico is concerned, we have had tremendous reviews. We're doing a great job. Everybody has said it's amazing the job that we've done in Puerto Rico. We are going to do far more than anybody else would ever be able to do.
Meanwhile, two new studies indicate that the Gulf Stream current in the Atlantic Ocean, which helps regulate the global climate, is slowing down and that global warming is probably to blame. A full shutdown of the Gulf Stream was depicted in the 2004 disaster movie The Day After Tomorrow, but the scientists stress that that extreme movie scenario will never happen. But lead study author Stefan Ramsdorf of the Potsdam Climate Institute warns that it could still have potentially severe long-term consequences for people living on both sides of the Atlantic.
For example, this slowdown leads to excessive sea level rise on the east coast of the United States. It changes the tracks of the storms moving into Europe, and it has even been linked to extreme heat waves in Europe.
Meanwhile, two new climate liability lawsuits this week. Eight Florida teens sued Republican Governor Rick Scott to force the state to act on climate change. Backed by nonprofit environmental law group Our Children's Trust, the suit cites the threat of rising seas and other climate impacts to Florida's coast and economy, and contends that the state's failure to act violates the children's constitutional rights to a safe and livable climate.
A lot of these suits now being filed all across the country and even across the world. It'll be very interesting to see how these play out here in the U.S.
And that's not all. In Colorado, three cities and two counties, led by the city of Boulder, filed suit against two of the world's largest oil companies, ExxonMobil and Suncor, over their role in causing climate change. The suit alleges that the oil companies, quote, knowingly produced harmful products and failed to disclose that to the public. It's the first climate liability lawsuit to be filed by communities that are not located on the coast. In a press conference, Boulder Mayor Suzanne Jones said they're seeking damages for record wildfires, record floods, and the cost of adapting to future impacts.
We think that the companies that knowingly caused this crisis should help pay their fair share, especially because they profited enormously from the crisis that they have created.
And these cases as well will be interesting to watch. I know that the oil companies are watching them very closely. They're very worried about it, and as far as I can tell, they should be.
Finally, Sunday marks the 48th annual Earth Day, with events scheduled all over the world to mobilize political action and engagement to protect the one and only planet able to support life in the known universe. This year's theme is ending plastic pollution, including the launch of a global effort to eliminate single-use plastics. Of course, for us here at the Green News Report, every day is Earth Day.
It is indeed. One day a year. That's for sissies. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us earthwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We're gonna save the world tonight.
Naturally, my good friend Brad Friedman makes a good point. Every day is Earth. Well, I mean, unless you call Norblap 9 home, every day is Earth Day. That's more of that compartmentalized thinking that gets us in such a into such a mess. Well, you know, we can despoil. There's lots of planet. We can cut all the trees down over here. And if we just plant some more over there, everything's going to be cool. I was reminded of that by something that was posted to me a couple of days ago. We're a little over halfway done with the program, this Thorn in the Side Thursday. An old New York Times article about a guy who was buying up coal mines, distressed coal mines in Appalachia, and he promised that for every ton of coal that he sold to be burned, he'd plant trees somewhere else. Doesn't work that way. Let's remember that a mountaintop removal site will not be part of a viable ecosystem for something like, at a minimum, 300,000 years. Mm-hmm. Scott reminded me, well, warning to future diggers, 1,500 years from now, the archaeologists of the future will need to wear hazmat suits and respirators. Their counterparts who dug in the Middle East in the late 19th and into the 20th centuries only had to deal with finding the occasional fossilized horse turd, but archaeologists of the future digging in many places in the U.S. will be risking life and limb, what with the toxic messes they're likely to encounter. And it's interesting Scott would think along those lines, because I've thought that way for a long time. I once had this notion for a sort of futuristic story. I don't know if it would be sci-fi, because I kind of imagined a future, well, dystopian, in which a band of human hunter-gatherers wanders into Appalachia and comes upon a series of lakes, great big lakes that look and then they get wet in them, and then they start dying. I'm such a little ray of sunshine. Because what I'm talking about there is, of course, the more than 200 multi-billion, multi-million gallon sludge, toxic waste liquid dumps that exist all over West Virginia. That's just West Virginia. There's more of them in Kentucky, more in Virginia, right. And it's not going to go away. You know, maybe 1,000 or 2,000 years from now, all the water will have evaporated out of them. That'll just mean that there's highly concentrated arsenic and selenium and barium and magnesium and manganese and lead and mercury in what, for all intents and purposes, will be a geologic stratum at the bottom there. Meanwhile, Bill with a note says, hey, Bob, you're showing your age with that song. It reminds me of a TV show, WKRP in Cincinnati, as well as my ute. The bunch I hung out with were Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin listeners. Oh, I hung out with some of those myself. I was one of those myself. Mm-hmm. So, where else to go this evening? Because there are so many options. Remember conscience? We only hear about conscience. Now if a, if somebody, say in Appalachia, wants to go to solar power instead of coal-fried electricity because their conscience drives them to it, and they lobby for, ask their elected representatives to make it easier to install, you know, consumer-level solar here. They just doing it because they hate coal and they're liberal tree huggers. Well, no, I'm a Christian, and I care about the Lord God's creation and His Son Jesus' commandment that we be decent to each other and not so hateful, and that's a way for me to live up to my Savior's commandment. Shut up. Well, we're back in Michigan again. It's the Michigan Hour. On the horn. Jamie and Krista Contreras are a couple, and they had just had a baby. And newborns sometimes get sick. And when Jamie and Krista's baby got sick, they took the baby to the doctor's office, and they were told I'm not kidding. When they said, well, is the doctor coming in to deal with baby? Our doctor, the doctor we've treated with, the doctor that's our baby's doctor? Well, a different doctor looked at Jamie and Krista Contreras and said, no, I'm going to be your doctor now. Your doctor prayed on it and decided she won't see you at see you all today because you're lesbians and you're living in sin and helping your sick baby would violate the doctor's conscience. That POS doctor should have her license to practice medicine taken away. Discriminating against a baby because of who the parents are? That's one of those New Testament no-nos. You know, you don't visit the sins of the parent upon the child, even assuming for a moment that two women who love each other is a sin. I particularly don't adhere to that. There's a new campaign out there called Beyond I Do. And the focus of Beyond I Do is to make people aware of the hurdles that people still have to leap, even though their marriages are deemed constitutionally legal by the Supreme Court of the United States. Because one of the things that Jamie and Krista found out is that there in Michigan, it was perfectly legal for their physician to discriminate against their baby based upon who the parents were and how the doctor had prayed on it. Jamie said, we spoke to other people and they would say, well, they can't do that. That's not legal. Unfortunately, Jamie noted, well, we looked into it and yes, it is. Imagine that. See, that's what this is about. When people talk about adding sexual orientation to non-discrimination statutes, and the right wing says, oh, we don't want to give legal protection to the queers because Jesus. Yeah, okay. But that's what this is about. Because if you add sexual orientation to the list of proscribed discrimination, then bigoted pediatricians can't do that. Now, there's an argument to be made. Do you really want somebody who hates your guts treating your baby? And the answer, I guess, is no. But people have to be taught that such discrimination is not acceptable. You know, for a while there, it was not acceptable to, lay siege to high schools with trucks waving Confederate flags and urine-colored snake flags and Punisher skulls and shit. But because we didn't do a good enough job of making people understand that, no, that's not a freedom issue, that's a shitty human being issue, boom, Michigan. Krista Contreras said it was horrifying talking about finding out that their doctor despised their child, their newborn little girl, because of who her parents were. It was horrifying and humiliating, and we just kept thinking, God, She's 6 days old, and she's already experiencing discrimination. Now, see, the pity of it all is that the story doesn't give us the name of the goddamn doctor. That doctor's name should be spread from Dan to Beersheba. And anybody walking through the door should be made abundantly aware that that doctor is a Christian bigot. But no. The doctor has more rights than that 6-day-old baby does. Hell, according to the kind of religious maniacs who manifest the same sort of attitudes that doctor does, that baby, that 6-day-old baby, had more rights when she was in the womb than she does now that she's out of it. Oh, baby's got a fever. Too bad she's not in the womb. I wouldn't hate her then. There's nothing in this story about filing a complaint with the Michigan Board of Medicine against that doctor. Such a complaint should be filed. The doctor should have to answer for herself, answer for her actions, answer for her fucking prayers, and then go home and say her own and hope she gets to keep her license. But remember, evangelicals are some mighty, mighty, mighty delicate little snowflakes. Note coming in from Lee in New York. Almost a Star Trek reference. Do you watch The Orville? One of the episodes was Into the Fold. In the story, a planet's water has disease. A boy from the ship falls into a river and gets it. Yes, we watched all of it, and I've been wondering if it would be renewed and if there'd be a season two, because in many ways, that was a better Star Trek, or that was more in line with the attitudes of Star Trek than most of the Star Treks that have come along. I'm trying to remember, what was I watching where I saw, is his name David Jones, the guy who plays the Kelpian on Star Trek Voyager? I saw him in something else not too long back, and I can't remember what it was. Yeah, Marty, I agree. Marty says, so much for the Hippocratic Oath. At least with that one. Yeah, first, do no harm. Well, I didn't do any harm. I just didn't do any good. I just ignored the baby because it was a dirty little sin baby. See how it works? Yeah. Oh, I probably need to make mention of this. Let's get out of Michigan. But let's do stay in the within the realm of the letter M. By the way, Alexander says, if that doctor was other than white, you already know that would be the case. Please don't let the doctor be a black male. No way of knowing, because they wouldn't identify the doctor, and I don't understand why. Yeah, I know. Brother Deacon Asa says, things get dicey pretty quickly when doctors start preying on little infants. That's P-R-E-Y-I-N-G. And that's what it is. But anyway, let's stay with the letter M. How about Memphis, Tennessee? How about a substitute teacher in fourth grade? The substitute was called in for whatever reason a substitute gets called in. When I was a kid, I always hated having substitute teachers because it seemed like 99% of them were just pissed off. Never mind. They probably were, because they were having to deal with, you know, kids my age. But there in Over Park Elementary School in Memphis, Tennessee, a substitute teacher, and, you know, substitute teachers come in and they don't necessarily have the best handle on where the students are in their lessons, so they just kind of have to wing it. So this substitute teacher came in and took the group of little 9 and 10 year old fourth graders and explained to them, under the guise of a discussion of race and politics, said that, now you students, you know which ones he meant by the you part. Dark, you know, skin darker than weak tea. You students just have to get over it because Donald Trump's now, and he's going to be in office for 7 more years. And Carol McMullen's daughter just covered her ears. And then a little white boy in class went after her. And he said that he told the little girl who just, you know, was not interested in hearing racism and bigotry, that the wall should be built because Mexicans need to stay in their own country. Ms. McMullen said, people like my daughter said her name and pointed at her. In other words, they pointed at Ms. McMullen's daughter and said, yeah, y'all need to stay in Mexico. Well, is there a happy ending? I don't see anything here in the story that says that the substitute teacher will not be coming back. Just like there was nothing that suggested that the physician in Michigan wouldn't be practicing medicine anymore. But upon receiving complaints, the Over Park Elementary School administration sent the school counselor around to teach a diversity class. Oh, wait, there's the good news. The teacher was banned from the school. And then the whole school district banned the substitute from the school. Cranky ass old white lady. Y'all need to just get over it. Where's Todd when I need him? Y'all need to just get over it. Trump's going to be president 7 more years. Wow. Oh, and thank you, Lee and Marty, letting me know the Orville has been renewed. Good, 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 good. I'm looking forward to it. And so let's check in, leaving the letter M in Michigan and Memphis. Let's skip over N and go to O. Ohio. High in the middle and round on both ends. Clark County Municipal Court was the scene of a not guilty plea by Kyle Artis earlier this month. He's a firefighter there in Clark County, Ohio. He was released on a personal recognizance bond. The German Township Fire Department put him on leave. I don't know if it's a volunteer fire department. If it isn't, he's on a paid vacation. The criminal charges against Kyle Artis stemmed with some work being done around a house in Springfield, Ohio. Ohio Edison had subcontracted some tree trimmers to clear some limbs from around their power lines. According to a police affidavit, that is when the tree trimmers were confronted by a 43-year-old Kyle Artis. The affidavit says that they were trimming a tree when a white male began yelling racial slurs and pulled out a gun. And Artis, on the other hand, was just bugging out when the police pulled up, and he denied using any racial slurs or brandishing a shotgun. He said he was just moving the firearm from the top of the refrigerator to his bedroom because, well, we all keep a shotgun on the top of the refrigerator. Well, I mean, we keep it in the bedroom. But when you get up in the morning and you go in to fix your coffee, you got to take your double your side-by-side 12-gauge double-barrel shotgun with the shells in and hopefully the safety on, and you just kind of hang it over the crook of your elbow like that, and you go in and the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup and a shotgun in the crook of your arm. And then you set it on the refrigerator while you reach into the fridge to get yourself out your milk or you make your coffee and you drink your coffee, and then when you're done with your coffee there, you put your shotgun back in the crook of your arm and you take your shotgun back to the bedroom, you know, because you never know when the Black Lives Matter ISIS Antifa is going to come barreling through your door there in Springfield, Ohio. Mm-hmm. But he pled not guilty. He didn't use no racial slurs. Uh-uh. On the other hand, apparently if you go and you look up Artis's Facebook page, which I'm sure is private by now, you'll find that his cover photo is of a gun rack with a shotgun and a rifle in it. And it's that gun rack is in front of what? Of course, because it's not too far from Ohio to Michigan, a Confederate flag bearing the legend, Heritage, Not Hate. A little bit further down on his Facebook page, it says, I am a gun-totin', T-O-T-E-N. But we know how he voted. I'm a gun-totin' redneck. God, country, family, America. Meanwhile, back to the tree trimmers, who were the ones who were threatened in the first place. In the police affidavit, it says that Artis said he was unsure if the victims were actually with a tree company or not. Mr. Artis stated he was upset with the way that the victims were trimming his tree. He later stated he knew they were a tree company because they were working around the corner last week. You know what would tip me off to the fact that they were a tree company? That it was a bunch of guys with chainsaws and pruning loppers and a truck and ladders and maybe even one of them cherry picker buckets, and that they were trimming limbs around a power line. I mean, I'd call that a
Well, I'd call that a clue.
The police did feel like it would probably be a smart thing for them to go ahead and search Kyle Artis's home, where, of course, they found the shotgun with which he said he did not, definitely did not, threaten the people who were trimming the trees, even though he was real upset about the tree being trimmed. Look, I understand that. Out here in front of the mansion, we used to have some old, and I mean old, and like since like before the place was built, there were four or five beautiful hemlocks, and they sat right at the edge of the yard as it goes down to the road, and they did a bang up job of providing needed cooling and a screen of the dust off the road. Well, along came Appalachian Power a few years later, and they said, "We're sorry, your trees are in our right of way," and they cut them right down to the ground, so that now it's a constant battle to keep the dust out of the place. And the noise is demonstrably louder too. So, I understand the frustration, but at no point in time did anybody here yell any racial epithets. Of course, not a lot of cause to yell racial epithets in West Virginia. Hey, you white guy who's almost not quite as white as me, quit trimming my trees. But it's a different story over in Ohio. Yeah. By the way, when the police found the shotgun was loaded. Yeah. Springfield, German Township. Mm-hmm. He's facing three counts of ethnic intimidation. That'd be an interesting statute to look up in the Ohio Code. Apparently there's a problem with the German Township Fire Department, because last month another member got unpaid leave after sharing a Facebook post that used, of course, a racial slur mocking people of color, as well as high school dropouts and fast food workers. It had been just a few weeks since Bradley Baugh had started his job at the Springfield Fire Rescue Division there in German Township, and he was a lieutenant even, and he got canned. Each of the three ethnic intimidation counts carries 6 to 12 months in jail. They are misdemeanors, of course. There are $6,000 in possible fines. An investigation is underway. But goddamn, in the age of the Trumpansy, you don't just have a disagreement with somebody. You have to bring ethnicity into it too, or sexual orientation, because Trump. Well, all right, I didn't know that. Brother Deacon Asa says, you can make fun of the upstanding Ohio gentleman all you want. Fact is, those Keurig pods are known to attack homeowners at random. He had a good case for strapping a hog leg to his hip before percolating. Well, what kind of word is Keurig anyway? That's probably some sort of Muslimy ISIS, Black Lives Matter, Antifa word anyway, ain't it? Sure. So we've been to Ohio. Let's blow through Kentucky and not Memphis, but head back down to Tennistan. A little town a little town in Tennistan that's, well, golly Moses, it is not racial at all, that town. Just ask the Lord High Mayor, he'll tell you. Oh, yeah. The mayor in question. Casey Burnett of the little town of the ironically named Friendship, Tennessee. Yes, really. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. Friendship, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Friendship, Tennessee, where an African-American family had moved into a home. And no sooner had they moved into the home than they began receiving racist threats and intimidation. Their home was vandalized. They were renters. They didn't buy the place, so they weren't saddled with it. But they were subjected to vandalism, automobile vandalism, vandalism to the garage, breaking and entering. Theft, pounding on the home's door late at night. This went on for months. And then, yesterday morning, the father, there were children there, went outside and saw that his home had been spray painted. Kill niggers. Get out niggers. And that's when they said enough. That's when they packed up and they moved that very day. Went to try to find somewhere else to live, anywhere but living in Friendship, Tennessee. Mayor Casey Burnett, though, he was a little bit upset, too. He said, that's a pretty building, and it's right on the corner there in the downtown area, and I was just more concerned with getting the paint off the building than I was anything else. Now, I just said the words that were painted on there. Get out and, yeah, right. He said, well, it did have a little bit of a racial slur to it. But we're not a racial community at all. And things like that aren't at all reflective of our community, except when they are. They're not racial, though. I guess now that the family's moved the fuck away from Friendship, Tennessee, they're a little bit less racial than they were. No, you're not racial, Bubba. You're racist. Daddy, who was afraid to be identified because he feared for his life, said, if they're bold enough to walk up on a lit, and I'm saying this is a well-lit house at night and do this, there's no telling what they'll do next. It has nothing to do with boldness. It has to do with the fact that a majority of the 608 residents... Okay, wait, let me do the math. It has more to do with the 510 white residents of Little Friendship, Tennessee, would probably stand there and watch people do the spray painting and never say a word, because, you know, they're not a racial community. Police are dutifully investigating. Mayor Casey Burnett said, well, if we had a problem, we won't put up with it. We'll put a stop to it, but I think this will blow over in a day or two. Mr. Mayor, I think it's already blown over because y'all managed to run the family done out of town. Good thing they didn't have a barn. You would have burnt that. Not you, Mayor, Mr. Mayor Casey Burnett, but some other non-racial member of the community, the 510 white folks out of 608 people there in Friendship, Tennessee. Man, it just kind of makes you. It makes you want to fire up some Lee Greenwood. And I'm proud to live in America where I'm not racialist at all. All right. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. Subject line, heritage, not hate. So why don't these people fly the British flag? Isn't that part of their heritage, too? Well, that ain't American. Robert, see, you understand, that ain't American. That's your Union Jagoff. But the Confederate flag, that's a bona fide, genuine flag of America. The greatest country in the history of the world on Earth now, today, in the universe, forever, under God. Because that flag was come up with by Merkins after they said they didn't want to be Merkins no more. But it's about our heritage. Because we done give up our British heritage and people what eats oatmeal in a sheep's gut or something called spotted dick. We're Merkins. We don't do such things as that. We're proud Merkins. You understand? Lee, meanwhile, says, bacon for breakfast. Gun on the refrigerator? Because you got to put it somewhere when you make breakfast? Oh, God, I did. Did you forget Ted Cruz's recipe for your breakfast? That's right. We're talking here about Ted Cruz's machine gun bacon. You know, where you wrap the bacon around the muzzle of your semi-automatic assault rifle, and the assault rifle barrel gets so goddamn hot it'll fry bacon. Yeah, Ted was real proud of his bacon recipe there. Clarence in North Philly says, POS hateful doctor in Michigan. I'm wondering if this doctor treated people she hated with intentional malpractice. I wouldn't want to go to her. Her and her Christian conscience. Maybe she's just going to send some people to heaven. Why fool around down here when you could be plucking, when you could just be plucking your harp up amongst the angels? James in Illinois, changing doctors. I had to do that because I refused to sign my doctor's petition against the hated Obamacare. Also had to pick up and move because the nearest pain clinic, 70 miles away, was operated by the same asshole doctor who happened to be an immigrant from India. Fuck some immigrants, Bob. That's why I'm no longer calling you from Kentucky. On the good side, I traded Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul, and Ed Whitfield for Dick Durbin, Tammy Duckworth, and Robin Kelly. Win, win, win. And, you know, Tammy Duckworth just made history She cast her vote against Jim Bridenstine, whom we talked about earlier today. She cast her vote against Bridenstine with her little baby daughter in her arm, which, by the way, caused considerable consternation and hissy fitting and conniptionizing among the Republicans, because conservatives said she's going to weaponize that baby to make mostly male senators try to make them vote for things that are good for, like, babies. No shit. I wish I was kidding. Weaponized baby. Well, there we go. Knew it was coming. Scott and Punky with an update. Your magic eight ball with the cracked screen that always says answer hazy, ask again later is in good working order. Heidi Heitkamp is first Democrat to support Mike Pompeo for Secretary of State. I wish I could say that that took some special prognosticating skills, but it didn't. Dear me, dear me. Let's run over and see what's going on with Todd down in South Carolina, Stan. Hey, Todd, I think I conjured you earlier.
What's going on?
I was just thinking about the. Give Trump a chance. Yeah, I had one.
That was the conjuring. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know Washington Journal. Oh my God! All right.
Took one for the team today, did you?
Well, the past, you know, I try to every day, but if I can deal with it. But back to this issue with these folks calling in and claiming that Washington Journal is leaning left, and because they claim the press.
If they wasn't leaning left, they wouldn't have no damn Democrat line for them to call in. That's pretty much leaning left, ain't it?
No, but see, all right, so if you look at the flat numbers, yes, most stories are negative about Trump. Now, last time we talked about this, you know, I was really simple about it. I said, well, you know, it's like the, you know, why do you call the car thief a criminal or, you know, something to that effect. But from a social science standpoint, what one should say is that when you have an individual who consistently engages in negative and antisocial behaviors, you know, what do you expect? I mean, the people are just reporting the news. I mean, the guy is always doing something negative and antisocial. Therefore, if people are really reporting what the president is saying and doing, it's going to be negative. But I don't know why they can't understand that.
You really don't know? You don't? You don't understand?
Because
I can help. I can help real fast. Their brain is about the size of a goddamn BB.
Well, I was going to be more generous than that, but okay, I'll go with what you said. Okay, that's fine.
I mean, you've heard me say it before. It's a thing of it. If their brains was gas, they wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ants motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB.
It's painful at this point. Even Pedro had to say, well, look, no, they never usually respond. Today, this morning, he said, no, I'm sorry, it's just not the truth. And he was pissed. He was pissed. Pedro was pissed. So, I mean...
Well, hell, I hope Pedro hides his address and stuff because, you know, they'll come and burn a sombrero in his yard or something. Just because his name's Pedro.
They're going right. Oh, these folks, man, it seems like it's... Oh, by the way, you sound like you were doing, like, the Lynch report. You know, like on black radio back in the 50s and 60s when maybe on Sunday night or Saturday night, somebody would get on the radio and talk about all the lynchings around the country. You know, all the
it just shocks me. I get up and I do my prep every day, and there's one of these everywhere. I mean, there's one or two or three. I haven't even gotten to them all, Todd.
Mm.
You know, I haven't gotten to the black guy that the cops stalked in a Walmart parking lot and then killed.
I haven't gotten him. I haven't gotten to the follow up. The two guys from Starbucks finally gave an interview. One of them's only been going to that very same goddamn Starbucks for the last 4 or 8 years or something. No shit.
Damn.
Do you know how... Wait, because some of this stuff I didn't know. Maybe you didn't either. Do you know how long they were in there before the cops were called?
They weren't. They were only in there about maybe less than 10 minutes.
2 minutes.
Oh, so right after they left the bathroom is when they called the cops. Right after they left the bathroom.
No. Bathroom, schmathroom. They got in there. They got a table. The one guy says, "Can I use the restroom?" And she says, "No, it's for paying customers," and called the fucking cops. I mean, boop, 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 911.
Hmm. Well, look, man, those center city cops don't play around. Now, you could see they were bicycle cops. And,
yeah, but the thing is, the police commissioner finally came out today and said, we're going to have to apologize here.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard Mr. Ross, Commissioner Ross. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think that works out well for him actually, because he came out for his people to begin with. Now, I don't agree with any of this. I'm just saying, he came out to agree with his folks first. Then, when Starbucks said, "Well, God, everything was wrong. We were just so wrong. We're going to do this. We're going to do that," you know, they gave him some shade. They gave him some cover. So that he can come back and say that, because he's in a kind of bad place too. But that, yeah, see, it's the cops on the ground. They didn't have to do that. They really did not. They didn't, especially when, like, in other words, they have a lot of leeway. If they had listened to the witnesses, people around in the Starbucks, you know, because once again, this is on film. You know, and they're telling the cops, like, "No, what are you talking about?" And truthfully, people do that all the time. Are you kidding? Especially with Wi-Fi. People, are you kidding me? People go in and plug their goddamn phones in.
And don't wind up being frog marched out 2 minutes later in handcuffs.
I really try not to process that too much, because, you know, honestly, yeah, it happens. It happens a lot. I mean, I'm not gonna make this about me. But yeah, you know, if people get tired. I mean, it's just. We knew this was going to happen. It starts at the top. We knew this was going to happen. But this stuff is going to crumble, because you can't base everything on negativity. Negativity, you know, it just crumbles. And I'm glad Scott let you know about Heidi Heitkamp, because I was just reading The Hill. I'm starting to like The Hill, you know, a lot. And guess who is going to represent Trump now? I don't know. You already.
Oh, no, I haven't mentioned that, but I should, yeah. Rudy Giuliani has joined Team Trump, even though Rudy Giuliani is probably a goddamn witness in the Mueller investigation.
That's what the fuck I'm talking about. I could not believe that shit. I'm like, that motherfucker's under investigation. He has to be. How the fuck can he not be?
Well, I mean, I'm not even saying under investigation, but at the very minimum, a witness. And if he's a witness,
a lawyer
cannot be a witness in the cause in which he is representing said client.
Giuliani is as dirty as Bitter's diaper, all right? I mean, just point blank. Don't you remember that? He may say, "No, I got something coming on Tuesday." I remember all this shit, man. All this. Because he's always been a snake, anyway. Fucking gargoyle. I'm telling you, and you know, he's another one of those little nasty, you know, white collar racist type people, man. I didn't mean to yell over you, but I just
no. I mean, you don't keep that shit bottled up.
that is really, yeah. I could, when I saw that, I'm like, he is. You know what though? He's losing his mind. He's going a little senile too. I noticed sometimes he has a little. Behavior is a little weird. Something's wrong with him. Who would get it? Who would? He is that much of a media. I'm not going to use that word. So yeah, he wants to be in the media so bad that he would stoop to that level. That is absolutely ridiculous. Now, what do you think about that? Seriously though.
I think it's a mark of desperation. I think it's cronyism. I think it's sketchy as hell. And it's some, but the problem is, for the last week, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags has been hemming and hawing about, well, I don't know if Michael Cohen still represents the president. I mean, president's got a lot of things going on. I mean, Michael Cohen might. I think they had dinner a couple of weeks ago or so. Oh, golly gee, I don't know.
I've missed her briefing for a few days. I usually really try to catch it because it's so entertaining. It's amazing that
I hate myself for how much I laugh every time I see a meme with Miss Piggy behind that podium, and because it's just too close.
With the pearls, I never thought of that.
The pearls and the terrible dress and the one good eye.
Oh, God damn.
I mean, look, for years.
I missed that shit. Oh, my God. See, you're the one. See, I said some fucking terrible shit about her. I said bad shit. That's why I didn't say nothing since then, but. How did I miss that? Oh, my God.
And for years, I've read the phrase, turned a gimlet eye on somebody, you know, and he turned a gimlet eye. And I never really fully appreciated what a gimlet eye was until Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags came along with that thing that she does where she can make her entire face shift through about 40 degrees, and not just one eyebrow, but the whole eye goes up and the other eye goes down and droops and the other eyebrow goes down, and she'll fix that one good eye on Jim Acosta from CNN or April Ryan and tell her that's a stupid question. You know, one of these days somebody's going to say, hey, Sarah, we can help you with the hump. And she's going to say, what hump?
Oh, God. My stomach is hurting over the Miss Piggy thing. I'm still trying to process that.
Oh just get on the interweb tubes and here, let me see how long it takes me. That way we'll know if it's going to be some sort of long and involved search for you.
See, I'm not on Facebook. I think that's all.
No, I'm just searching. I'm just searching. I'm just Googling. Sarah.
It's just the neck. Pearls, the hair, that's her.
Sarah, here's the search term. Okay, I got Sarah Sanders M, Sarah space, Sanders space, M, and it auto-populated Sarah Sanders, Miss Piggy.
Damn. Okay.
Hey, and there it is. There it fucking is.
Oh, God. You know what? I don't feel sorry for her because she brings this upon herself. Because at some point she should say, I don't know, you have to ask the president. I mean, she can't continue to do what she does. It's not humanly possible.
No, and for the love of God, don't click the images link. Because...
Oh, shit. Is that a day's worth of material, Bob?
Oh, well, the first one that pops is just the best one. Because she's got that whole gimlet eye thing going on.
That's
a forever. The gimlet. And she turned her gimlet gaze upon the press corps.
Did you see the other day how tipsy she was? She had a couple shots or something.
Shit, I couldn't get out there without a half a case of Old Panther.
But wait, you know what? Like I like to watch it on C-SPAN because they have a camera and they'll show the reporter's expressions, and their expressions are priceless. Like Mara Liasson, she has an interesting look a lot of times. But John Roberts, now he's serious. There's a woman that sits next to him, nice, attractive-looking lady. But sometimes they just look, the term aghast. Like if you look at gas stuff.
Well, yeah, and this will be the second. So there was a reference the night before last, and I've already referred to. I mean, the whole White House press corps. I mean, if they all had thought bubbles, it would be the same thing, and it would be that John Goodman line. I went deep in debt, studied my ass off, got my journalism degree, so I could sit here and listen to a woman who works for a man who sold meat through the mail.
Oh, I loved when I heard you say that. You know what? I love that. I was thinking, I was like, okay, here's the question. Who is a mentally ill fascist who has actually tried to make a living sending meat through the mail? And what is his current position? Now, pose that question to a maggot.
Oh, I know. Who introduced a brand of vodka 2 years after Putin introduced his own? There's another one.
Plunk. Oh, so Sarah, you know what? The weather here is actually getting warmer, and I heard what you said. I'm sorry you're having that cold weather. It's getting warm here. You know, it's gonna be cold tonight, but you know, it'll be warm and muggy in D.C. soon. And you know, the thing is, these nice T-shirts are really popular, you know, with logos and different sayings on them. And, you know, I'm sure Sarah wants to wear a nice T-shirt in the summertime to play with her kids. But, you know, she's in a real conundrum because of her Pinocchio-like nose, she's not going to be able to get that nose and that head through the top of the hole. You know, she's not going to be able to get the T-shirt on. And it's just going to be terrible. And, you know, it's a shame. Well...
Yeah. By the way, a note coming in for you. You know, you get email too on this program. Marty says, "Hey, tell Todd to stop insulting gargoyles."
Well, okay.
Small jingle.
Well, anyway, man, you hang in there and try not to hang anybody over the shelf because. This is listener supported radio.
Well, it is, and we're kind of on the short end of the listener support stick right now, but we'll knock it down, I hope.
Okay, and I hope Carol calls in. I would like to hear Carol's voice if she's listening.
Carol's busy right now.
Okay.
For those who follow her on Facebook, they already know. Carol has invaded Mexico.
Mm.
And apparently is having quite a successful progress through that country. I think she's laying siege to Puerto Vallarta right now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Good for Carol.
I'm incredibly, incredibly jealous. She keeps posting pictures. She keeps posting pictures of places that are stunningly green and wet and beautiful. And, you know, because, see, when Geezer Disgustus talks about Mexico, you know that dumb bastard thinks it's a bigger desert than Saudi Arabia, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a bunch of, what, dewless campesinos sitting with their sombrero in their white peasant costumes with their sombreros pulled down over their head, sitting with their backs against the adobe brick walls of the mission, you know, just sitting around waiting for the Magnificent Seven to ride up or something,
like Porky's, you know, like the south of the border here in Dillon. You know, the stereotype. Yeah, that's him. He's stuck in between the 50s and the 80s. Yeah, you're right. That's him. Oh, God. But hey, guess, you know what? Even Jeff Rentz is now ragging on Trump.
Wow.
I you know, because I found a workaround, because I don't want to give them any clicks, so I have a workaround to listen to what he, you know, what he, what they're doing. And yeah, they're angry, you know. Then you know he's got his pulse with the neo-Nazis, and they're pissed.
So, oh! I got a trivia moment for you, and Scott and Punky will get a kick out of this too. I for some reason or another, I just got tired of the news cycle this morning, and I was watching DirecTV Now, which works some of the time. And because I'm there pretty frequently, Turner Classic Movies is one of my go tos, so I could see what's on there. And lo and behold, and this was a cultural moment. But lo and behold, this morning they were running Beach Blanket Bingo, quite possibly one of the whitest film series of all time. You know, Annette Funicello, Frankie Avalon, Linda Evans in this one. Remember Linda Evans?
Yeah, she was hot.
Paul Lynde, for God's sakes. I just clicked on it And I happened to join in progress as the Comic Relief Motorcycle Gang was plotting some sort of vengeance at the little white surfer kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so the name of the motorcycle gang is the Rats, and it was spelled on the back of their black leather jackets, and they were all done up in Marlon Brando style, with the little billed cap and everything, but on the back of the black leather jacket in white lettering it said RAT, and then the Z was backwards. They were the Rats, but the Z was backwards, and it kind of hearkened to a sort of fascist reference,
like one of those SS looking type of
It was a little bit like a Schutzstaffel, only more compressed. Mm-hmm. And this film is released in 1965, okay, so literally 20 years after the end of the Civil War. But here's what I found kind of surprising, and in a way my mind connected to it to a degree, it's really never been gone away, because they're shooting pool in their hangout billiard room, right? And they're fuck ups, and it's all comic relief, and nobody's getting killed, and Frankie and Annette will solve their bliss problems somewhere along the way. But I could not believe my eyes, and I actually pointed it out to Agnes. I said, "Wait a minute, honey. When the camera comes back and they show the pictures on the wall, who is that?" Because I was really doing kind of a double take, one of those W.C. Fields things. I couldn't believe it. On the wall of the pool hall are framed 8x10 glossies of Adolf Hitler and Mussolini.
You're fucking kidding.
No.
Did they have the stop function? Did you stop and were you able to rewind and look at it? Freeze it?
No, I just kept watching because it kept showing up in the scene. It was unmistakable.
Oh my God.
And there was a third picture, and I couldn't identify who that was. But there was Hitler, and then somebody I didn't recognize. And then Mussolini.
Okay. So I got two questions. Number one, who was the director? And then what happens when you think about, like you said, 20 years, this is 65, which, when we're older, 20 years is really nothing.
Well, 1965, I guess Hogan's Heroes is on the air, right?
Right. So now we know the history of like the Hell's Angels and stuff like that, right? Because they were like restless.
Were the Hell's Angels running around with swastikas?
Well, that's what I don't quite understand. I don't know if they were, that doesn't make any sense. But maybe I don't know.
Let's see.
We've always had a Nazi problem.
directed by William Asher, written by William Asher and Leo Townsend. The ne'er-do-well comic relief motorcycle gang leader, Eric Von Zipper, he shows up in the other part, the other manifestations of this little film series, played by Harvey Lembeck. Now, the funny thing is, he received tremendous accolades both on Broadway and on in the film version for his portrayal of one of the characters in Stalag 17. Which was deadly.
The movie that Hogan's Heroes is based on.
Right, but Stalag 17, there wasn't nothing funny about it.
No, it was a good movie. It was a good movie. Right.
But it was just weird to see, I was shocked.
But see, the 65, like, in other words, the people going to see those movies then, it's all about having a good time, popcorn and Coca-Cola, and you might make out in the car, and, you know, maybe you have sex, maybe you won't. You know, it's about having a good time. Who the hell, why would, is that a joke? Why would they put that up there? What was going on with
ha,
that?
Ha, 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 Hitler and Mussolini are so funny.
Okay, and let me get this off my chest because maybe somebody else can call in. But I really have been wanting to ask you this for a while. All right, why is it that it is so distasteful for a lot of people to disconnect the dots with this mentally ill fascist and Hitler and Mussolini and the way they came to power in terms of degrading the press at first, setting up their own press office, which he did with Bannon, and now he's doing through Sean Hannity and has done to other people. You know, just all these tactics. I mean, it's like the damn manual, by the book. So when people mention that, they get all fucking offended, even though the facts are there. So what's up with that? Explain that.
I don't know that I can. I mean,
am I off base here?
No, I don't think so. Not in the least.
Okay.
While we've been talking, I've been I just called up a clip from Beach Blanket Bingo, and it's not the best shot, but you can see the three portraits hanging on the wall of the pool room. Were we so over the Second World War by 1965 that the Nazis were just funny?
No, you know what that is? No, now that I think about it. Remember, this is the height of the Cold War, though, 65. So what they're saying is that, remember, these guys are bad. They're not the beach people. These are the bad guys. They associate with communists and socialists and Nazis. They're the bad people. And see, this is who they have hanging up. These are the portraits they have hanging up in their clubhouse. These are who they idolize. Because, remember, you hang things on the wall, things that are dear to you, things that you idolize, things that you like to look at. So 65, yeah, that was the height of the Cold War.
That's just the weirdness of my life. I mean,
but it's good you caught that. Why would you have something negative like someone put? In other words, a director, right? When you're directing something, you pretty much have control of what people are seeing, right?
That's well, yeah. Point.
So I don't know if that maybe it was somebody in the back, you know, like the people who do the strike the sets.
Okay, I've got there it is. Okay, perfect. Okay, anybody wanting to see this, go on YouTube. Look, the guy who posted it was Dave Smith. Beach Blanket Bingo, follow your leader, paren EQ, and it begins. By showing those photos. And the guy in the middle is Harvey Lembeck. It's the clearest shot I've gotten.
Wow. That's weird.
Yeah, well, I thought it was. But it kind of... You'll forgive me, Todd, if I say that it's sort of proof that it's always been floating around in the undercurrent. I mean, sure. Mel Brooks had a hoot with the Nazis. You know, Hitler on Ice, for Christ's sakes. The entire plot of the producers. But that was so overt. But this is, I mean, it's a framed portrait of Hitler, framed portrait of Harvey Limbeck, and a framed portrait of Mussolini. By the way, James just wrote in and said, Hell's Angels. Yeah, they wore German helmets and had swastikas, although it wasn't overtly political. They were just assholes. I used to hang out in a bar around the corner from their San Francisco clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit of clarification. But it just struck me as weird because we're kind of up to our eyeballs in Nazis now, and people want to say, well, you know, okay, well, yeah, okay, there's some of them, but there's not that many. But the shit's always been in the background in this country.
Why don't enough Americans understand that?
Maybe it's because we had captains of industry in this country who had profound Nazi sympathies. You know what I mean?
Like Bush and IBM and...
Well, Brown Brothers Harriman and Prescott Bush, yeah. I mean, during the lionization of Barbara Bush, whom I have managed not to talk that much about, because God knows enough has been said in the way of throwing her actual life down the memory hole. But Henry Ford, practically every IBM, all these corporations were playing footsie with the Third Reich. And you know, Henry Ford published what was it, the Dearborn Independent or something like that, just a vicious anti-Semitic rag.
That's historical fact.
Yes.
You know, a lot of Jews will not spy a Lincoln. They might have, you know, like the snowbirds, you know, the ones that live in New York and have a home in Miami. They buy Cadillacs. They will not buy a Ford. They will not buy a Ford. I guess everybody knows that. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Oh, and I wanted to ask you this too, with this this Pompeo stuff going on. Now, why is it? I've been seeing such a weak pushback in the press when they know what a repulsive character this guy is, and he had no credentials to even really. I was not comfortable with him being in charge of the CIA, in charge of our secrets. Him?
No, I mean Pompeo. Jesus Christ. Like I said, you know, it's all about, oh, yeah, he graduated first in his class at West Point. That doesn't say anything for West Point. but moreover, the guy's a bigot, okay? He's a confessed bigot. He's a buddy of, among other, and you know, guilt by association. Well, is that what we're going to call this? He is an adherent of the philosophy of Frank Gaffney. Quite possibly the biggest or second biggest Islamophobe in the entire country. And that's the guy who, as Secretary of State, is going to deal with the rowboat floating on a sea of gasoline that is the and all the parties in the rowboat sitting there flicking matches at each other in the Middle East? That guy? Really?
See, that's what I was afraid of. Have you heard his rhetoric? Now, he sounds like he's trying to bring on the new crusade, and he's in with the wrong crew because they can pull that off. You know, we got...
No, wait, no. Time out. He doesn't want to bring on the new crusades. Todd, he's an evangelical millennial or pre-millennial looney tune. He wants to compel his Savior, Jesus Christ, to come down through the clouds and get to rapturing and tribulating.
Oh, so just blow everything up.
Because he believes those hallucinations that John had on the Isle of Patmos.
Look, This guy makes me nervous. I've been doing research on him, and he is absolutely a loose cannon wing nut, crazy person. He really is. And the way he lied on his job interview in front of Congress, I think he failed. I hope they do not nominate him. He failed as far as I'm concerned. And this bullshit with him acting outside of his parameters, you know, that's unconstitutional, number one. We talked about that. But I don't know. Are people just now just tired? I am worn out. This is painful. This whole exercise and buffoonery is painful.
Yeah. I'm every day. I mean, and like I said at the beginning of the program, I'm going to do some other stories tonight because I'm tired of everything that we do, whether it's ABC, CNN, MSNBC, God knows, Fox, you know, radio, whatever. I'm really sick and tired of participating in what is, for all intents and purposes, Trump gossip. I mean, I almost feel like declaring a moratorium on discussions of Mueller. You know, until he shits or gets off the pot, there's nothing to talk about.
That's something to think about, Bob.
And frankly, the nasty ass people that he's empowering are actually saying more about this country right now than he is. I mean, I can't begin to say how angry I would be. If, you know, I mean, I can't know the experience of a lesbian couple, but, you know, say we, Agnes and I, and there was a star in the east, and we had a 6-day-old newborn that we took to the doctor because she was running some sort of fever, and the doctor looks at us and said, "Well, I heard that you don't believe in Jesus, so I can't treat your baby." I'd be in jail. Okay?
That's the danger in this asshole. You see, people are feeling empowered. Some people are feeling empowered to act on their biases. It's okay. That's the danger in having a leader who is morally corrupt. And I know moral, that's a subjective term, but, you know, in general, more. Well, you know what? I can't see us going through another 2 years of this. Something has to happen.
No, you can't, but you know what? When you're in the middle of a 10-mile run, you can't imagine mile number 8 either. But you keep picking your foot up and setting your foot down and the other up and the other one down, and the next thing you know, you can't imagine mile number 9 either. Cuz I mean, this is just hanging up on a rock wall with no ropes. You know, climb or die. There's no rappelling back to the ground and going, fuck this, I'm going home. No. You either get to the top or nothing. I mean, this whole thing from January the 20th, 2017 to now and into the future is the ultimate double or nothing wager. Because if we can't get through it, there's not going to be anything left. But the other side of that coin is acknowledging reality. Look, I know it's such a fun parlor game, Todd, to talk about what Mueller's going to do and when's he going to fire Rosenstein. But it's a game. It's a game. The only thing that we can do anything about are the issues where we can either get on the internet, get on the phone, or get in the streets. And over the rest of it, we're powerless.
Mm.
I mean, am I wrong?
Damn, man.
So. I mean, I wish there was. I worry when I hear somebody like you say, "I don't know if we can get to it." I don't know if we can get to 2020. We don't have a choice. Because I don't think I don't think either you or I can afford plane fare out of the country. Or a way to keep living if we do. Because begging on the streets of Berlin or Paris is not anybody's style. And if you just give up, then they win. I mean, this is it's not the London Blitz, but it's that steady day in, day out, no let up. And look, the for-profit media know what they're doing. MSNBC's never had better ratings. Neither has Fox. Circulation for the New York Times and the Washington Post, no matter how many stupid tweets Geezer Disgustus puts out, they're doing a land office business. And just like what's-his-fuck, the head of Viacom said of CBS, Donald Trump may not be good for the country, but he's really good for CBS.
Yeah.
And just take, just watch, once you get past that little, the 3-hour morning zoo crew program that MSNBC has, just watch their straight reporting. It's nothing but Donald Trump gossip. As much as I like some of the people on camera, it's nothing but Donald Trump gossip from 10 o'clock in the morning until the opinion programs start in the evening. Because everything has a Donald Trump angle. And then there's the other side of the coin is that to a certain extent, it all feels like it all feels like it's all because of Trump. But like that story I shared from The Hill about the executive order on poor people and, no food if you no work.
That's crazy, by the way. That's insane.
Well, shit, that's a clip we were playing from John Hagee a decade ago with him standing in the pulpit saying, if a man will not eat, if a man will not work, neither shall he eat. Starve!
And then they clapped. That was...
Yeah, but there was no Donald Trump on the horizon then. That's just Republicans. That's just any day that ends in Y for the GOP.
So why are they so evil and nasty? I'm just curious.
The shorthand is that they are economic and religious neo-Calvinists. God manifests his preference for his chosen people by making them wealthy. And if you're not wealthy, God doesn't like you. And if God doesn't like you, nobody has to do anything for you. And people can do things to you. I mean, that's the short and skinny of it. But we have to, but we have to be prepared to get through each day. And it's not necessarily easy. So, I mean, maybe that doesn't help, but it's the closest I've got to an answer.
No, those are good words, food for thought. I've cut down a little bit because it gets to be repetitive unless there's some breaking news or something, which there always seems to be with this crew.
But, well, and the worst part of it is we talk about the resistance and everything, but look, Heidi Heitkamp, scared to death she won't be reelected, badly wants to keep being a United States senator from North Dakota, terrified that Trump's going to turn his baleful gaze on her. So, she'll vote for a bigot who hates Muslims to be in charge of our Middle East foreign policy. And that's depressing. Okay, that's just depressing.
That just showed up front page on the Hill. That just showed up. Yeah, well, not just, but yeah, a little, you know, right. And I was liking you here, hearing you bring up that word mugwump. That's just a wonderful word.
Well, it also. I may not even be using it correctly, but it sure feels good.
Yeah. These are different times. I mean, we're going to look back at history. This is going to be younger people are going to look at us and say, "What the hell are you guys thinking about?"
Yeah, you don't. People, we don't realize that we're living history. So. You know, we bought the ticket. We take the ride.
And you know, I did hear you say the other day. I know you have to go, but I heard someone was asking about Dr. O'Brien and his show, and you were pumping his show up. And I stopped listening for a while. It just, you know, just a time issue, or I don't know, whatever. I got out of the habit, but we really need to know. It's good to know history. Any kind of history, because it's just good. It's good to have a foundation, because things do repeat themselves. And I think really it's sad where we have so many people now, and it's a statistically significant cadre of Americans who really think academia is a bad thing. And they don't even they have been so brainwashed now, they don't understand that's how laws are made. That's how you get knowledge.
Yeah.
That law just doesn't pop up out of any, you know, you have to go to an expert with it.
No, what's the line? History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes.
Yeah. It's just really sad. And so I don't, you know, and these people are gonna wreck everything. It's gonna be so wrecked. Red. And people are just going to be angry. I don't know where how this can end. I don't see where this ends well anyway. I really don't. And because, like, I'm wondering what the topic is going to be on Washington Journal tomorrow. I mean, I have no idea.
Rudy Giuliani?
That I would love to hear that. I'm telling you, that guy is as dirty as a coal miner at the end of the shift. Don't you remember when he said, "Oh, I know it's coming. We got a surprise coming. Oh, it's coming." And mm-hmm. Remember, he had ownership in a tech internet security software firm in Russia at the time.
Oh, there's compromat all over the place.
This is really, you know, this is like a soap opera, except it's our lives.
Yeah, it is, and it's like reading a gossip column every day. I do have to get out of here. We've run over time, but Todd, it's been a good conversation. You take care.
You too, Bob, my friend. I'll talk to you later.
All right, later now.
All right.
That's our buddy Todd. Time to get out of here. We close with a $450 fundraising goal that will be $650 unless something changes dramatically overnight. So hopefully we can knock that down. We're only a couple of days away from moving into the fundraising free portion of the month, if we can just finish up. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you. To our news ninjas. Hope you're enjoying your vacation, Steve and Miss Karen. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.